This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
The goal of this podcast since day one is to provide the best information on the Vancouver real estate market at no cost to you, the listeners. To that end, we'd like to thank the following sponsors.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, you're still at home. Just you.
Yeah. I'm still here. Painting the fence.
Are you painting the fence today?
Apparently, and you've been doing stuff too. I ran into my neighbor from 10 feet away, and he said that it is true. Everybody's going to have the best. Their houses are going to be in the best shape ever after this. After this is all over, if you're in a single family home.
Honestly, I've been doing so much gardening. I've painted parts of the exterior of my house. I almost rebuilt my shed today. It could be a beautiful summer around the city. In fact, I actually, just a quick story. I was sitting out yesterday in the front yard, and a young woman cycling by. I was with my daughter Ivy, and she stopped and she took a photo of us, and she said that she is out driving around Vancouver doing, I guess it's like a photo editorial of people and how they spend their times on their property. So I guess on their balconies or in their yards around Vancouver right now. But basically she's taking photos of people in isolation.
Weird. So you might be famous.
Yeah, I doubt it. But I might be on a blog somewhere. Not sure where.
Right on. So, hey, who do we got on the show this week? We got David Hutniak on the show.
Yeah.
He's the CEO of Landlord BC.
Really enjoyed this conversation with David. Super bright guy and really, really useful information. They are a group, Landlord BC, that has over 3,300 members. And obviously, they're focusing on landlord-tenant relations in the province of British Columbia.
Right, and the interesting thing about Landlord BC is they've been around for a long time. They're very important. They put out tons of useful information from anyone who has, anyone who's an aspiring landlord to somebody who has one, two, three doors to some of the largest property owners in the province. All our members all benefit from being a part of Landlord BC, but what's almost more surprising than anything, we had them on to talk about the situation, obviously, with COVID-19. We had David on. But that we haven't had him on before is almost, it's inexplicable.
Well, according to David, he may not be back.
That's true.
No, I think he had fun, but at the end he did say that. Wait for the advice that he'd give him his 18-year-old self.
Advice he'd give his 18-year-old self. Yeah, that's right.
No, but I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, well, it's a great conversation, and they are putting out a lot of information. They do have a newsletter. Their website is up to date on resources for people involved in landlording in regards to COVID-19. I think they're updating it daily. So yep. It's definitely a good organization to be aware of. And this was a fantastic conversation.
For sure. Check out landlordbc.ca. And Matt, before we get to our conversation with David, you've got a tip from Oakwin, our brokerage.
Oakwin Realty, yes, that's our brokerage. Best in the business, no doubt about it. Fantastic place to work and a fantastic community of people. The Oakwin tip this week is, did you know that additional GST may be applicable on flipped, quote-unquote, properties where new properties which have just completed are resold? Make sure to ask your realtor or accountant what this could mean for you. So in this case, this has been around for the last couple of years where properties, GST is paid at completion on a new property, but if it's turned around and sold, there is potentially GST paid a second time. And a lot of people have got caught in this situation, not knowing that they're on the hook for 5% of the purchase price when they thought the GST had been paid. So you definitely want to be aware of this if you're looking at either selling or buying a new property and
or a heavily renovated one.
Or a heavily renovated one, and you want to talk with your realtor, your lawyer, and your accountant to make sure you have a good team there giving good advice.
Yeah, Matt, and we always have our tip as well. And this week, I just want to shout out a local designer named Andrea Wong, who I believe her shop is in Gastown or Chinatown, but her website is awbyandreawong.com. And she is actually making face masks right now, and she's selling them on the site. I think they're really inexpensive, about $10 or so, but they're quite beautiful. And she's shipping them out. So if you are looking to get a face mask, and you and I were talking about this morning, I think obviously we're not epidemiologists or doctors, but there's a talk about face masks, even though you're not preventing catching COVID-19 from other people, you're helping prevent the spread of the disease from yourself to other people if you wear a face mask.
That's right. And it does seem like face masks are becoming the new norm, at least for the time being. And she's out of Chinatown here in Vancouver. And yeah, COVID chic, man. These things look good. I'm looking at them right now.
Might as well support a local designer if you're not going to make your own. Pretty creative stuff.
Support your local business and keep everybody safe around you. I think that's a win.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
Maybe we should cut. Oh, wait. Before we cut to our talk with David Hutniak, we should just one more plug. The inaugural virtual open house we're doing in Lower Lonsdale tomorrow. That's Sunday, 2 to 3 p.m. We'll both be there. Social distancing in a nice, very nice, large 3-bed, 2-bath. Overlooking the water, phenomenal. So come join us there. But maybe, Adam, we should cut to our talk with Landlord BC CEO, David Hutniak.
I thought you were actually going to say extra large, nice mask because you need the big one to fit your dome.
Yeah, I got the AW extra large and in charge.
Yeah. All right, well, enjoy this conversation with David Hutniak. Okay, so we're here with David Hutniak, CEO of Landlord BC. How are you doing, David?
I'm good. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time today, David. Can you start maybe by telling us a little bit about yourself and about Landlord BC?
Yeah, well, Landlord BC is an industry association. We represent owners and managers of rental housing in British Columbia. We're a member-driven organization with about 3,300 members. And, includes the largest owners and managers of rental housing in the province and also, you know, the many, many mom and pops as well who actually disproportionately represent our sector. And we're an advocacy group at the end of the day, but also very much concerned about professionalizing the rental housing industry and ensuring that the landlord-tenant relationship is as positive as possible, and that the industry and the housing we provide remains viable and grows in the long term.
Just a question about that, David, and I haven't thought much about this, and I don't know if you'd know the answer, but it does seem like, you know, we work with a lot of mom-and-pop investors, and a lot of people who listen to the show are either have a couple doors or are interested in acquiring doors. Is the Lower Mainland, are there more mom-and-pop investors in the Lower Mainland than in other cities in Canada or North America? I would guess that's probably the case, but I'd be curious on your thoughts and how that relates to kind of professionalizing the sector.
Well, I mean, it's true across the province. I mean, we don't actually know exactly how many landlords there are, but we do know that there's in the order of 550,000 households that for whom we provide housing, and so consequently. There are many, many small landlords. That's the bottom line. If we look at our own membership, two-thirds of our members are small mom and pops and people with basement suites. So, you know, it's safe to extrapolate that across the province. And really, I would say it's even higher than two-thirds. So the secondary market, as we call it, is hugely important for providing long-term rental housing. And at the same time, I mean, we're not a regulatory body. Like I said, we're an industry association. So, there's some unique challenges with engaging those small landlords. Many of them don't necessarily appreciate that they're running a business or that they're part of an industry. So that's a never-ending challenge. We try and do our best to, have them appreciate that, there's a broader sector that they need to be concerned about, that they need to operate in an ethical and responsible fashion. And obviously, their support of our organization is important, so that we can advocate on the broader rental sector here in British Columbia. But yeah, hugely important housing. That's not going to change in the foreseeable future. We're not building enough purpose-built rental, and, the odds that we will in the next 10, 15 years are pretty unlikely. So secondary market, long-term rental housing, hugely important. And we need these folks to be, financially viable, which is proven to be a huge issue with the COVID-19 situation that we're facing right now.
Yeah, David, in thinking about COVID-19, does it resemble any other challenges that landlords have faced that you can recall?
None, to be honest with you. I mean, this is certainly unprecedented, and needless to say, with the it's a health crisis first and foremost, and so certainly it was not unexpected that the provincial government, really provincial governments across Canada, invoked a moratorium on evictions, and that includes for non-payment of rent, because like I said, we have a health crisis here, and social isolation, social distancing are pretty important. So people need to be housed, but that has created a huge range of challenges for our sector. And the entire sector is really vulnerable, but I would say that it's probably really the small mom and pops that are most vulnerable, because many of them, who have basement suites, that's their home. They have a basement suite because they needed it to basically provide secure their own housing. So they have regular jobs. Many of them are ill or unemployed too now. And so this is multiplier effect that has, I think, it's hit the whole sector, but the small mom and pops are especially vulnerable.
Are you hearing from a lot of your members? Like, we're trying to get a sense of on the ground in the last couple of weeks, and Adam and myself are both work in real estate, so buying and helping people buy and sell real estate. But Are you hearing a lot about people needing to defer their rent or being unable to pay their rent or just deciding they're not going to pay their rent? What are you hearing from your members?
Well, sure. I mean, that's a work in progress in terms of tracking that, and it has its challenges. I'll be honest with you. But, we expected to see, some challenges for April. One of the things that we did really quickly, over a few weeks ago now, actually, we really proacted to this in the sense that we were reaching out to our members and really the broader sector very quickly, too, that, suggesting, more than that, strongly encouraging landlords to start talking to their tenants and, find out what's happening and really get that communication moving along so that if there are going to be challenges that they can work together to find sort of a mutually beneficial solution. We provided, rent deferral agreements that they might employ just to get the conversation open here so that, first of all, I mean, really important to make sure the renter feels that, there's some degree of sensitivity and compassion coming from the landlord in this crisis, but also, so that they can work together to find solutions. So when we were going through that process, we said from the beginning that, April, is probably going to be a challenge. And we have seen that, there have been, some rent deferrals agreed, and some, folks haven't paid rent at all. But I think April will probably end up not too bad, but we're more concerned, frankly, about May and June and beyond that. It's such a balancing act here right now. So renters have a responsibility to pay. Some can, some can't. We have an eviction moratorium, which, we totally get. But the federal and provincial monies haven't started flowing. There's just so many moving parts here. I think April will prove to be, not bad overall. It's also going to kind of depend upon almost by building, by landlord to see how it totally unfolds. But we're actively, pursuing continued dialogue with the provincial government because we're really concerned about, what unfolds for May and June and beyond. And they provided renter support, the rent supplement, that money hasn't come out yet. But we feel strongly that something more robust is going to be required here for the coming months.
And the rent supplement is the $500 per month, correct?
Yeah, I mean, right from the beginning, again, we've been dialoguing. We have actually a very positive relationship with the provincial government and try to be a good collaborator and partner in these challenging times. So we were very much pushing for really robust tenant renter supports. In fact, we were pushing sort of a rent bank concept, which, for the full amount, like a micro loans, interest free, et cetera, where we even suggested a hybrid sort of a rent bank with maybe a grant, like the $500 a month or something. They elected to go this way, and that's their prerogative. So it's $500, but right now we have not had final confirmation whether it's per individual or per household. And the application process, we believe, should be, up and running this week if everything goes as planned. And it's a two-part process. The tenant has to apply first, and then the landlord has to provide some additional confirmation. So, and then the money would go directly to the landlord. It's being run through BC Housing. So, I mean, nothing's perfect. I give them full credit for, trying to get everything with respect to this rent supplement up and running as quickly as possible. These are hugely challenging times. So, like I said, we're trying to support them in any way we can. But I think, we're going to need something much more substantial. Because right now, the bottom line is that $500 And I know you gentlemen are very familiar with rents in Vancouver. That's going to be woefully inadequate for many renters.
Yeah. I think that's a storage space in a shed.
So there's a gap there, and right now the way it's structured, that's falling on the backs of our sector with no commitment to any sort of measures to mitigate that. And that's really, so we're spending a lot of time on that. And it's not unique to British Columbia. That's a national issue. And so I'm part of a national entity. And just got off a conference call, in fact. So this is talking to my colleagues in other provinces. We're all facing a similar challenge. And renters across Canada are facing a similar challenge. And certainly more pronounced in like Toronto and Vancouver, even Victoria, the higher cost areas.
David, do you see COVID-19 as kind of heightening some of the tensions between landlord and tenant, or is there an opportunity here for increased communication and kind of making a better relationship?
Wow. That's a hugely challenging question and a very loaded one, my friend. I don't mean to make light of it. What's disappointing, unfortunately, is definitely we are seeing, a cohort of advocates who, seem to be, focused on sort of pitting landlords against tenants and, which is really unfortunate. I mean, we have good relationships with, the higher profile tenant advocacy groups, and we work with them and meet and talk on a regular basis. And, we share many of the same concerns. Obviously, we have some different perspectives, but in the context of COVID-19, at the end of the day, we need people to stay housed, and we need to find, supports for renters. But, they know that our sector needs to remain viable, because if it isn't, nobody wins, and renters will ultimately end up suffering. So I would say that, it is disappointing. We're seeing some, a cohort of advocates who are, unnecessarily encouraging renters, even if they can, to not pay rent and sort of trying to leverage this opportunity, really in a sort of a unnecessary and unfortunate direction. I mean, we are truly all in this together. And, this rental housing ecosystem is, very vulnerable to imploding, and I think people need to understand that, and that's why we need the senior levels of government to we need a backstop here from the feds and the provinces for the sector. It's pretty scary, and I think in particular for those mom and pops, they're a very vulnerable group. So we'll see. There's been some disappointing rhetoric that we've seen, and it is what it is, I guess.
Maybe pulling back kind of outside of our current times with COVID-19, and just kind of thinking about the NDP in general. I know you have a close relationship with the provincial government. One of the first things the NDP did when they were elected was revise the Residential Tenancy Act. Do you think the new measures, or they don't feel that new anymore, but the new enough measures have been a positive change for the rental market?
Well, I mean, short answer is the Residential Tenancy Act in British Columbia is the best one in the country. It is largely balanced. And I always like to say, both tenants hate the BCRTA and landlords hate the RTA. So you got the perfect scenario. But we did support some changes. The one that I think got some initial reaction from our sector was the fixed-term tenancy with the vacate clause. The reality is that was being abused by, or not being used as it was intended when it was first implemented many years ago. We had significant disagreement with the provincial government and the housing minister was, back in September 2018, when one of the sort of initial measures pushed out by that rental housing task force was to change the maximum allowable increase formula from 2% plus CPI to just CPI. And that was really something that we argued, very, very strongly against their doing. And I think, really wish it hadn't happened. That created, some huge financial pressures. And, we're now that with COVID-19 here, we were, working with them since September 2018, because at the same time they said, okay, well, but in they announced that they would work with us to create an additional rent increase process, a more robust one. And we were basically there in terms of having it all nailed down, and it would have been introduced this month. But that's not happening now. So that's going to be problematic, and I really have no idea how that's going to unfold, but it's obviously not a conversation that we're going to initiate at this point in time.
One thing, David, that struck me, maybe going back to kind of the seeming attempt to politicize the moment in terms of the relationship between landlords and tenants, was you mentioned the word imploding, and it seems like I would be curious to hear more about the financial pressures, but why the ecosystem is so what's the word?
Vulnerable.
Vulnerable, exactly.
Yes,
that's why I'm here. I'm here to help you with words. it goes back to those mom and pops, frankly, because the other issue is certainly in the context of what we've been hearing, this notion of mortgage deferral by the big banks is kind of a misnomer, and it's not happening in any robust fashion. And certainly, the folks who have a basement suite, they are particularly less attractive to a bank at this juncture. If you're just a mortgage holder and you need to maybe negotiate a deferral, you are likely to be more successful than a guy who has a mortgage and a basement suite. Now, all of a sudden, he's unemployed, or the whole family is, has no revenue coming in, and also they have no rent coming in. So all of a sudden, that changes the whole dynamic. So I think small landlords looking for mortgage deferral are more challenged, and there's a lot of them, and that's going to have a significant negative impact. And as you gentlemen well know, I mean, mortgage deferrals are not free.
Right.
It's the fees, there's interest upon interest, it's all repayable, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, in the broader context of this COVID-19 challenge, the bottom line is that at this juncture, the way it's structured, there have been no specific measures to provide sort of a backstopping for our sector. And so what's going to happen, let's just look 3, 4, 5 months from now, whenever this hopefully starts normalizing, is that there's going to be rent deficits, unpaid rent, even in the deferral agreements, you know, they may be executed, but there's a real risk that there's going to be a whole bunch of landlords who are going to have huge unpaid rent balances, and the likelihood of collecting those unpaid or those outstanding rent balances, you know, I think it's going to be pretty challenging.
Right.
So this is the cumulative effect of that, I think, just makes the sector really vulnerable. And again, those small mom and pops, I think, are at the top of the vulnerability sort of scale.
And for somebody out there listening, and I hope there is no one, but there potentially is, that is kind of facing these challenges right now, where the rent wasn't paid in April, or they're in discussions about the rent not being paid in May. Like, it sounds like you guys are working hard to try and sort out some solutions here. But in terms of advice for folks right now, is it hang tight, or what kind of advice would you give?
Well, okay, first of all, I think, yeah, we are very actively involved in a sort of continuing dialogue with the province. The one thing that we felt that, you know, some of the errors were made, missteps were made, was, you know, there's been confusion. First of all, you know, they had said there's a rent freeze. And they kept using that terminology, which was totally incorrect. There is no rent freeze. There is a freeze on rent increases, but that's very different than a rent freeze. So that created some confusion with renters and even landlords, for that matter. But we had members who had tenants come up to them and say, well, there's a rent freeze. I don't have to pay my rent. And we're saying, no, there's no rent freeze. It's only on the increase, which is the 2.6%. So that was one thing. The other thing is, and I mean, certainly the premier and the housing minister did say, you know, they expect renters to pay their rent. I think, you know, it was not as clear and as forceful as it could have been. And certainly since then, you know, we've had multiple, you know, communication opportunities here. And certainly, Spencer Chandra Herbert was out there, and certainly in additional communiques that they pushed out, they've made it much more clear that the expectation is that renters will pay their rent, and we appreciate that some are simply not going to, but they have a responsibility, a legal responsibility. But also, again, this goes back to, you know, we have multiple people like Evan Siddell, the CEO of CMHC, and other leaders saying, you know, this is where the whole system becomes so vulnerable. Everybody needs to, mortgage holders need to pay their mortgages, renters need to pay their rent. I mean, we've got to, you know, you have to find a way to do it, and that may require tapping into some savings or whatever. But I mean, the money, there is pretty robust programming from the Fed, and various provinces are coming to the table as well. So we need to get through April here. Money is going to start being available. But right now, everybody, as landlords and tenants, need to, you know, understand their responsibilities, meet those responsibilities. But yeah, I mean, it's hugely challenging, and I totally empathize with the renters, but also the small landlords in particular, who, you know, maybe their bank isn't being as cooperative as possible. But I would say just, you know, be persistent, and you know, you got to do a lot of advocacy on your behalf here, I guess. And certainly we have been very public about the fact that, you know, the big six banks, you know, the federal and provincial governments need to do more to get the big six banks in particular really understanding the dilemma that our sector is facing, not just mortgage holders, but small landlords in particular.
Right. You know, one thing that I saw online that you guys were advocating for, and you mentioned it, but not everyone is probably familiar with this idea of a rent bank. Can you speak a little bit about that and what that is and how it would help?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. we're huge supporters of the rent bank concept. And there are about 9 or 10 rent banks in British Columbia right now. And I've actually been, the Vancouver Rent Bank, I've been on the advisory committee for 5 years now. The rent bank concept is really simple. It's micro loans basically that are repayable, with no interest. And the way the whole rent bank system was originally set up was basically, you know, if someone, a renter, you know, just whatever, I mean, anybody can have a, you know, a blip in their financial, situation. So it was really driven by the desire not to have people evicted because they can't meet their rent, but as a short-term solution. So it'd be like for 1 or 2 months or 3 months that the rent bank would extend monies to cover the individual's rent. And so they would make an application. Like I said, they have to, you know, meet pretty rigid criteria, and the rent, the loan is repayable over, you know, some period of time. But the rent bank would extend the monies directed to the landlord. And it was just, you know, really, it's a great vehicle. You know, it exists in Ontario, but the provincial government actually, you know, I guess, 2018 budget, was it? Or, yeah, 2019, my apologies for forgetting when, you know, basically allocated $10 million to create a broader, more robust network. But they, you know, the existing network is small and don't have huge loan capital, you know, so they could not realistically handle, province-wide rent bank for tens of thousands of applicants. But the concept could have been accomplished, in our view, and this would have allowed them to provide, you know, larger amounts of support, more in line with the actual monthly rents. And, you know, we have suggested, you know, they get CMHC to backstop the financial risk. There was, you know, there's a lot of different conversations around this. And like I said, it's just they elected to go this route. It's just the 3 month grant. And I think it's, you know, it's going to be very challenging at this juncture to sort of reinstitute the conversation around a rent bank. So, you know, we're kind of moving to other solutions here. And you know, I would say the rent bank is off the table at this juncture.
What in your mind, and I know we're early days and it does feel like, you know, there's been some optimistic news in the last couple of days, but also the situation is changing so quickly, so won't hold you to it. But the long-term impact of COVID-19 on the rental market here in Vancouver, in terms of people wanting to get into the market, or do you see any long-term changes due to COVID-19?
Well, let me get my crystal ball out here. Just give me a sec here. And my Karnak hat. You guys are too young to know that. But nevertheless, in all seriousness, yeah, I think we're going to come out of this with a very different rental housing sector. I think, if we don't get that sort of necessary backstopping, I think, you know, there's going to be huge challenges again, particularly for that smaller landlord. But even the larger folks, I think, you know, we're probably going to see over the next handful of months here, you know, more people struggling to pay their rent. So that's a huge negative. We're probably going to see higher vacancy rates. So, you know, at the end of all of this, it's going to be really hard to see, sort of the whole viability of the sector. There may be many who just disappear from it, which would be unfortunate. And then it's going to be, the issue will be, you know, what is the business case for building more rental, on purpose-built rental I'm talking about in particular. So there is, you know, significant uncertainty. We're going to get through this, but we're going to look, I think, quite different. And obviously, you know, that's going to have impacts on our sector and the folks who are part of it, but it's also going to have an impact on renters. So, like I said, that's the whole ecosystem. It's going to be really important that we work together with government and really, you know, you know, demonizing landlords is not a good idea. It never has been. And certainly, you know, landlords need to be continue to be compassionate and sensitive to tenants. We've got a, there has to be sort of a, you know, a collective effort here. We house over 30% of BC households in British Columbia, and that's pretty consistent across the country. So it's a hugely important housing typology. And, you know, next to food, shelter is pretty much the only other thing we care about right now. Well, health, I guess, because of the virus. But those are the three most important things. Your fancy car doesn't really make any difference at this point in terms of the whole pyramid of needs, does it?
Right. And as I understand, I guess the logic there is fewer players in the marketplace in the end means less rental stock.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the possibilities. But you know, I think it's going to probably initially there probably will be players disappearing. There will be higher vacancies for those in some of the buildings for those who survive. Those will quickly fill up because we have huge demand here. Is that, you know, at the end of the day, and as the economy reinvigorates, yeah, I mean, it could be more units available briefly, and then it could be much worse in terms of vacancy rates, even getting tighter than they were before. So this is just, a very, you know, this is unprecedented. We've never seen this before, but that I think as our industry group here, we talk with my colleagues, I think that's kind of one of the scenarios that we see.
Well, David, maybe we'll leave it there, but we do want to go out on these are kind of gloomy times right now, but in an effort to kind of go out on a positive note, we have five lighthearted questions about you and Vancouver. Can you stick around for that?
Sure.
Okay. So question number one, what is your favorite neighborhood in Vancouver?
Oh, I love the West End.
Ah, a good one. Is that where you currently live?
No, I do not. No, okay. But
it's a great one.
I have a daughter who lives there, and I moved here from Toronto many years ago, and I remember going to the West End and thinking, my God, this is crazy. Look at all the density and tree-lined streets, and it's just an amazing neighborhood. I love it.
Perfect. Yeah, it's pretty unique for sure. Favorite bar or restaurant in Vancouver?
Favorite bar or restaurant? Well, Blue Water Cafe is, I think, still my favorite. Less so now. My wife has become a vegan, so it's a little awkward going for dinner by myself. Okay?
that's the first time we've had Blue Water Cafe, but that's a great spot. Yeah. What is one piece of advice that you'd give your 18-year-old self?
Oh my God! Don't go on podcasts. No, I don't know, man. It's just save your money. Don't squander it. How about that?
That's a good one. Is there one book that you would definitely recommend our listeners read? Landlord related or not?
Well, you know, Wealthy Barber, Chilton, I think, you know, really nailed it. In fact, assuming our AGM goes forward in October, David Chilton is actually our keynote speaker.
Oh,
so
nice.
That's kind of, yeah, it's very cool. I think, you know, he's very practical advice, funny guy. You know, and a more current one is Mary Beasley's book, Vancouverism. If you guys haven't read it, you should. It's really a good book.
We had Larry on program, a few times, and actually we've given away probably what about 85 copies of his book on this podcast so. We're big fans. Yeah, there, absolutely.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. Yeah.
And the final question here, and thanks again for sticking around, David. What is something you've bought for under $1,000 that's had a positive impact on your life?
under $1,000. Well, you know, this is probably going back a few years now, but I was an early adopter of mountain biking with a group of friends of mine, and we were much younger then. And my first mountain bike was actually a Rocky Mountain stump jumper, and I paid $1,100. Sorry about that. But it was a pretty rudimentary mountain bike. But man, I had a lot of fun with that. And that really, you know, was a life-changing thing. We had so much exercise, great, friendships. And, still one of the best investments I ever made.
Great. Was that in BC or in Toronto?
That was here British Columbia. Yeah.
Very nice.
Well, and it speaks to the moment right now. At least I feel like I'm out biking more than I have been for some time, for mental health.
It's mental health. Yeah, I know. I'm on a treadmill here, and it's really not about the physical. It's about the mental. And I think everybody, you know, just takes care of themselves and take care of each other. And it's crazy. But look forward to getting to the other side, right?
Absolutely.
No kidding. No kidding.
And David, how can people find out more about what you're doing and, of course, Landlord BC?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way is just go to our website at landlordbc.ca. We have a COVID-19 portal and a blog, and we're on social media. We've been pushing out, my team here has been phenomenal. We've been pushing out so much information to help landlords and encouraging renters to read our content as well, but just that sample, agreements that they can use for deferral of rent, et cetera. Just tons of really, really good information. There's a huge webinar with about 800 or 900 people attending recently. Last week, I did some ones. So if you're a landlord, landlordbc.ca, go to the website. There's a, just scroll down a bit, you'll see a COVID-19 portal. You should check it every day.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again, David, for your time. Really appreciate it. There's a ton of useful information there and a lot of thought-provoking information as well.
Well, thanks for inviting me, and look forward to meeting you guys someday when we can get rid of this social distancing stuff, okay?
Absolutely.
No kidding.
Have a great day, David.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Landlord BC's CEO, David Hutniak.
Really enjoyed our conversation with David. Would love to get him back on the program, although fingers crossed after the five wire.
Well, you know what? I do think this is a moment. David's obviously a very busy guy. Landlord BC's doing a lot of really positive work in terms of relations between landlords and tenants and making sure that those relations are positive. But there's no doubt about it. It's a busy moment for David and his team.
Yeah, and we didn't want to. I think some of the questions we were asking were quite loaded, and I think David caught onto that. But I think that's the challenge right now, is that rent has become politicized in this kind of crazy way very recently. And if you want to learn more about that, just go on Twitter, right?
Twitter's a place. Twitter's a place to find out more about the politicization of paying rent. That's for sure. Yeah. But no, it was a great conversation, and so hopefully everyone found that useful and enjoyable. But what else do we got today, Adam? We're still doing two episodes every week, so we'll be back next week with two more episodes for you. If you're interested in all that we have to offer in terms of the back catalog and all the updated information, you can head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. That's where we put everything we're doing. Excited about that website. And if you want to talk to me about that, about real estate, about this virtual open house we're doing tomorrow from 2 to 3 or anything else, 778-847-2854 or Matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We also got that Sella Dwella line.
Saladuela info at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. I'm not even sure if Secret still is alive, let alone working.
Shout out to Secret. Somebody's editing this podcast. I'm not sure who. Anyway, Secret, if you're out there, reach out. Send a smoke signal.
Right on. Well, hey, enjoy the rest of the weekend, guys, and we'll be back next week.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting. Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.